Treasure of divine love, and who is filled with compassion and mercy, where has such a personality as Advaita Acharya gone? Where are my Swarup Damodar and Rupa Goswami? Where is Sanatana? Where is Raghunath Das, the savior of the fallen? Where am I, Raghunath Bhatta and Gopal Bhatta? And where is Krishnadas Kaviraj? Where did Lord Gauranga, the great dancer, suddenly go? I will smash my head against the rock and enter into the fire. Where will I find Lord Gauranga, the reservoir of all wonderful qualities? Being unable to obtain the association of Lord Gauranga, accompanied by all of these devotees, in whose association he performed his pastimes, Narottam Das simply weeps. Jai. Sri Ramananda Rai ki jai.
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 8. Lord Krishna shows the universal form. Today's text number 24 and 25. So we'll chant 24. So the word meaning Jahi Rin, Angana Darshaniya, visible only to the ladies within the house, Kumara Lilo, the pastimes of Sri Krishna and Balaram exhibited as children, Ante Vraje, within the inside of Vraja, in the house of Nanda Maharaj, Tat, at that time, Abala, all the ladies, Pragrihita Puchchai, the ends of their tails having been caught by Krishna and Balaram, Vatsai, by the calves, Ita Tata, here and there, Ubal, both Krishna and Balaram, Anu Krishyamano, being dragged, Prekshantya, seeing such things, Ujita, giving up Griha, their household affairs, Jahrusu, enjoyed very much Asantya while laughing. Yahyangana Hashamiya Kumara Lilao. Antarvaje tat abala pragrihita puchchai. Tatsar itastata ubhau anu krishna yamane. Prekshanta ujjati griha jarushu hasantya. Yahi yahyam kama dashaniya kumalila. Antar vaje tat abala pragrihita puchchai. Vatsara itastata ubal anu krishyamana. Prakshantya Sita Griha Jarushur Hasamcha. Yashangana Dashamiya Kumara Lila. Antar Vajeta Abala Pagrihita Putcha. Vatsa Utastata Abal Anukrishyamana. Shanta Ujita Griha Jahrusur Hasancha Translation. Within the house of Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd ladies would enjoy seeing the pastimes of the babies Ram and Krishna. The babies would catch the ends of the calves' tails, and the calves would drag them here and there. When the ladies saw these pastimes, they certainly stopped their household activities and laughed and enjoyed the incidents. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. While crawling in curiosity, Krishna and Balaram would sometimes catch the ends of the tails of the calves. The calves, fearing that someone had caught them, would begin to flee here and there, and the babies would hold on very tightly, being afraid of how the calves were moving. The calves, seeing that the babies were holding them tightly, would also become afraid. Then the ladies would come to the rescue of the babies and gladly laugh. This was their enjoyment. Text number 25. When Mother Yashoda and Rohini were unable to protect the babies from calamities threatened by horned cows, by fire, by animals with claws and teeth, such as monkeys, dogs, and cats, and by thorns, swords, or other weapons on the ground, they were always in anxiety, and their household engagements were disturbed. At that time, they were fully equipoised in the transcendental ecstasy known as the distress of material affection, for this was aroused within their minds. Purport by Srila Prabhupada, all these pastimes of Krishna and the great enjoyment exhibited by the mothers are transcendental. nothing about them is material. They are described in the Bhana Samhita as anandachinmaya rasa. In the spiritual world, there is anxiety, there is crime, and there are other feelings similar to those of the material world. But because the reality of these feelings is in the transcendental world, of which this world is only an imitation, Mother Yashoda and Rohini enjoyed them transcendentally. Om Ajnana Tananandasya Tananjana Shalakava Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Just one note before we begin. I was hearing this morning from one of my godbrothers about how important it is that when there is a person who's ill in your assembly, that that person receive care. And so our Prabhu, he mentioned about his cousin today having some diagnosis of his leg. And appropriately so, we should have concern for the Vaishnavas. Not that someone is sick or having some trouble and difficulty in some way, that we just neglect them. That causes us to incur great sin, he was saying. So we should offer our prayers for the Vaishnavas. And I would also ask you in this regard to offer prayers for one dear friend of mine. His name is Bhagavata Das. He's from Bulgaria. He lives in London. And I recently understood that he was having some serious health issues. He was in the hospital. So he can keep Bhagavata Prabhu in your thoughts as well. If you can't remember his name, Bhagavata, remember that devotee from Bulgaria, because we don't think often about devotees from Bulgaria. So, today's verses, very wonderful instruction here. It's interesting, I wonder how much thought goes into arranging these classes and the verses assigned, because it's very nice that these two verses are grouped together today. The first verse talking about transcendental enjoyment that the ladies in the palace of Nandaraj experience seeing the pastimes of Ram and Krishna as babies. And in the second, describing a certain type of anxiety that suddenly overcame them. So we'll talk more about that, how the two verses work together toward the end of what we're going to say here. But first I'm going to go back to yesterday. Maharaj Prabhu gave a very nice class explaining to us how different the spiritual world is from this material domain. He probably makes this point in the purport also. In the second purport he says that nothing about them is material. Of course, our experience as conditioned souls in this material world is virtually without any access to that transcendental abode. And so when we hear these pastimes of the Lord, we naturally think of them, naturally, maybe not all of you, but at least I, think of them, materially try to conceive of them. But as he pointed out, there's a wide range of difference in material affairs and the affairs of the spiritual world. And so our acharyas have warned us, Srila Prabhupada has given us ample warning not to try to make this mistake, not to make this mistake. And at the same time, we've been told that we should strive to understand the pastimes of the Lord in this life, to perfect our life. And perfected means to understand these transcendental activities of the Lord, and to not just understand them, but to actually go there, to live in that place, in that spiritual world, and interact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself on a completely transcendental plane. So we have both these things. Don't make material assumptions, and yet at the same time, strive for understanding. So, fortunately, while we're given these two prescriptions for spiritual life, we are also given a path, a clear path, how to go from here to there. How to go from here to there. It's a clear path, but it's a path that also has many challenges and things that have to be understood correctly. Just as this morning, my wife and I were talking about some instruction that's given in the 14th chapter of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Srila Prabhupada discusses in the Nectar Devotion, discusses Yukta Vairagya there. And our conversation was, well, we kind of always thought that Yukta Vairagya was sort of like a concession. Okay, you know, you're a conditioned soul, you know, you're fallen. So we're going to give you a concession, you know, take Yukta Vairagya, you know, bring it together. Your activities, your attachments in the material realm, use them in Krishna's service, and you know, we're going to give you that as a concession. But actually, as explained there in that 14th chapter, Yukta Vairagya is not a concession in that way. But rather, it's an opportunity for us to actually get on the path that the acharyas have chalked out, how to go back to the spiritual world, how to interact with Krishna in a transcendental way. And the point of our discussion was, a point being made there, was brought out by one of our godbrothers in his study of Nectar, of devotion, was that in order to understand these transcendental pastimes of the Lord, I mean, many of you were like expressing some joy when I was reading these things about how Krishna and the babies be dragged around. Naturally, that joy is there, it's coming out of your mouth. To be able to appreciate that means to be able to appreciate emotion, spiritual emotion. And one cannot experience or appreciate spiritual emotion unless the heart is soft. The heart has to be soft. You can't be a hard-hearted person. Like I'm saying, the whole point, someone's sick in your midst, devotee, and that person is not cared for, then you've got a bunch of hard hearts there. I mean, where's the compassion? Where's the softness for someone else's suffering? So, one's heart has to be soft, so There are necessary things on the path of devotion, like Gyan and Vairagya. But if Gyan and Vairagya are improperly applied, then the result is a hard heart. If you're attached to something, you have to give it up, and you just apply Vairagya, by making your heart callous toward that thing, then what's the result? Your heart becomes harder. It becomes harder to actually appreciate the transcendental emotion in the spiritual world. So what are you going to do with Gyan and Vairagya? They're necessary. But they cause the heart to become hard. Therefore, Yukta Vairagya. Therefore, Yukta Vairagya. Because by utilizing one's conditioning, one's attachments, material attachments, or material conditioning, connecting them with Krishna, one, you don't have to go through that callousness, shunning, that makes the heart hard, plus the heart becomes purified. And purified heart means that that heart is softening up. That heart is softening up. So on the path back to the spiritual world, we need to take these instructions, which contain very subtle differences, but are very, very important to keep us progressing nicely. Now, we're fortunate today also, Rangit Prabhu gave us some very nice bhajan. Today's discipline stay of Sri Ramanandarai. We can take this opportunity to thank him, because he also has opened up this path for us back to Godhead through the proper understanding. You know, the famous conversation, in case you were reading, it took place between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramanandarai, the bank of the Godavari River. They were questioning back and forth, at least initially, in the conversation. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wasn't accepting what Ramanandarai was saying. He wanted more. Tell me something more. He wasn't satisfied. So what was the first verse that he was satisfied with? First conception that he was satisfied with that was spoken by Ramanandarai? Yes, thank you very much. Those who, even while remaining situated in their established social positions, throw away the processes of speculative knowledge, and with their body, words, and mind offer all respects to descriptions of your personality and activities, dedicating their lives to these narrations, which are vibrated by you personally and by your pure devotees, certainly conquer your lordship, although you are otherwise unconquerable by anyone within the three worlds. So it begins with hearing. It begins with hearing. The process back home, back to Godhead, to engaging in the transcendental activities that are described here begins with hearing. And hearing is the way to soften the heart. Hearing is the way to soften the heart. Of course, again, when we have the prescription that Nagaraj was reminding us of yesterday, well, you have to hear from the proper sources. So it's not indiscriminate hearing. But hearing from the proper sources can actually affect the change in the consciousness in the heart. I was hearing recently one lecture where the speaker, and I'm sorry I can't remember who it was, the speaker was explaining that why not some other method towards self-realization? Why hearing? Well, they're explaining that sound vibration and hearing, it goes directly into the ear and can affect the consciousness. It doesn't have to be circled around through the mind and figured out and everything like that. It just comes in and affects the consciousness. It purifies. And so by hearing, we can affect the change in the heart. We can affect the change in the heart. The heart can be softened, because again, in order to relish the transcendental emotion that we find described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have to have a soft heart. Otherwise, it's not possible. It's not possible to understand what's actually taking place in the Lord's Leela. And now, there's a description of the process of the heart softening that's given in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 14, where that Krishna is instructing Uddhava. So I'm just going to read the verses there and a couple of the short purports to give you some idea of what it means, softening the heart or the heart melting. What does it mean the heart melts? And how does that help one enter the pastimes of the Lord? So starting with text number 20, my dear Uddhava, the only Lord devotional service rendered to me by my devotees brings me under their control. I cannot be thus controlled by those engaged in mystic yoga, Shankya philosophy, pious work, Vedic study, austerity, or renunciation. Only by practicing unalloyed devotional service with full faith in me can one obtain me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am naturally dear to my devotees who take me as the only goal of their loving service. By engaging in such pure devotional service, even the dog-eaters can purify themselves from the contamination of their low birth. Neither religious activities endowed with honesty and mercy, nor knowledge obtained with great penance can completely purify one's consciousness if they are bereft of loving service to me. And here we get into the part of the instruction that I wanted to emphasize. If one's hairs do not stand on end, how can the heart melt? And if the heart does not melt, how can tears of love flow from the eyes? If one does not cry in spiritual happiness, how can one render loving service to the Lord? And without such service, how can the consciousness be purified? So to understand these pastimes, what's happening in the spiritual world, how it's different from this material world, this kind of transformation has to take place in the heart. Otherwise, how is it possible to understand, to approach these activities of the Lord? Prabhupada has a short purport here, let me read it. Loving service to the Lord is the only process that can completely purify one's consciousness. Such service produces waves of ecstatic love that completely cleanses the soul. You see, the process and the understanding, it's not really understanding, it's more participation, it's more experience. But they're the same. The process and the experience is the same. The purification takes place by this loving ecstasy, and the understanding is there by this loving ecstasy. As mentioned earlier by Lord Krishna to Sri Uddhava, other processes such as self-control, pious activities, mystic yoga, penances, etc., certainly purify the mind, as stated in many authorized literatures. Such processes, however, do not completely remove the desire to perform forbidden activities, but pure devotional service rendered in love of Godhead is so powerful that it burns to ashes any obstacle encountered in the path of progress. The Lord has stated in this chapter that loving service to Him is a blazing fire that burns to ashes all impediments. In contrast, the small fires of mental speculation and mystic yoga can be extinguished by sinful desires at any moment. Thus, by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, one should ignite the blazing fire of loving service to the Lord and burn to ashes the network of material illusion. This is how we can understand. This is the difference, this is the gulf of difference between the material conception of these activities and the actual understanding of these activities, is the consciousness by which they are approached, the consciousness by which they are perceived, and the consciousness by which they are enacted. One final verse here, in a short part of the Prabhupada's purport. A devotee whose speech is sometimes choked up, whose heart melts, who cries continually and sometimes laughs, who feels ashamed and cries out loud and then dances, a devotee thus fixed in loving service to me purifies the entire universe. In Prabhupada's purport, by melting of the heart, one becomes very steady and devout in spiritual life. And this is important, what I'm reading here, because it makes a differentiation between material and spiritual. We're talking about the difference between material and spiritual understandings here. So we're talking about a soft heart being necessary. So what's the difference between a soft heart materially and a soft heart spiritually? That's what Prabhupada's explaining in this purport. Well, it's not Prabhupada's purport, I guess it's in the 11th canto. But the devotees following Prabhupada who have compiled this. By melting of the heart, one becomes very steady in spiritual life. Normally, one whose heart easily melts is thought to be unsteady. But because Lord Krishna is the stable foundation of all existence, one whose heart melts in love of Krishna becomes more stable and cannot be disturbed by opposing arguments, bodily suffering, mental problems, supernatural disasters, or the interference of envious persons. Because such a devotee is fixed in loving service to the Lord, he becomes the very heart of the personality of Godhead. So, materially speaking, the soft heart business is probably not where you want to go. Because people are going to cut you up out there in this world, take advantage of you in so many ways, soft-hearted person. But a devotee has to develop the soft heart. So, how is he going to be protected? How is a devotee going to be protected when he's softened his heart so he can understand the spiritual world? Lord Krishna provides that protection to the devotee. And indeed, as explained here, he becomes very steady and impervious to all these opposing elements. So this is how to bridge the gap, by softening of the heart, purifying the heart. And then one can relish these spiritual mellows. Now, I know my good friend Madan Mohan, he likes this word relish. And many times he's coming to me and start talking about relish, relish, relish. So what does it mean to relish? What does it mean to relish these activities, these transcendental activities in the spiritual world? And how does one relish? Well, I think that's also something that is very, very important. How do we relish these activities? We relish them like prasad. We relish it like prasad. And we sing in the morning with the Tulsi Devi, we're singing, E mere dhanadara sakya anugata kara. Anugata. We want a follower begging, please make me a follower of the cowherd damsels of Braja. So this anugata, following, that's how we relish. We don't relish by trying to get to the front of the line. But anugata, we follow. By following, then we relish. It's like, does anybody know what sympathetic vibrations are? Maybe musicians or scientists, sympathetic vibrations. One thing, I have a definition here. The vibration produced in one body by the vibrations of exactly the same period in a neighboring body. So, we want to be anugata. We're going to follow Sakyas. We're going to follow the Sakyas of Vrindavan. What does that mean? It means that as they follow, as they serve, as they enjoy, then that's reflected in our heart. We take the Vishad. We're secondary. We're not like primary. We don't put ourselves first. And you see, and the gopis are interacting with Krishna, they're not interested in putting themselves first. Get out of the way, it's me. No, anugata, they're following. The sympathetic vibration comes in our heart based on those that we follow. The Rupanugas, we're following Rupa Goswami. As he serves, as he feels, as he desires to serve Radha and Krishna, we follow behind him, render service to him, and we receive his mercy. That sympathetic vibration in our heart is coming from those we follow, anugata, your followers. That's how we relish. We which is different again than the material conception of life. In the material conception of life, it's all about me. How do I enjoy? But that's the difference. That's what Navaraj was telling us. There's a difference. We want to be the enjoyer. We think we're the enjoyer. We condition this material by false ego. We think we're the enjoyer. We want to be the enjoyer. So that puts us in the material realm. And far, far, far from that is the position of the residents of Vrindavan, who are simply concerned with serving Krishna and Krishna's pleasure. Not any pleasure of their own. Even that conception is hard for a materially inclined person to accept. That there's nothing in it for me. There's nothing in it for me. So, this is anugata, following. So that's how we relish. Now, just turning very quickly to these two verses I mentioned about how they work together. They work together very nicely. And once the heart is purified, softened, liquefied, then this type of sympathetic vibration can take place. And then we can understand the subtleties of the loving affairs that are there. Otherwise, we just sort of skip over. Okay, the cattle are dragged by the cattle. What happened next? What happened next? We skip over it. But what happened here? We have two verses. One in which all of a sudden, one in which there's a description of how the ladies are having so much joy and happiness seeing the boys carried by the calves all over the place. And in the next verse we hear, they're in anxiety. They're thinking, oh God, what if they get hurt? And their household activities are disturbed, it says here. They were disturbed, they were in anxiety. So what does this change? Why has it changed? Well, there's a science of Russell in which all of these things are explained. And I'll just try to mention three things that are happening here. I think it was mentioned yesterday, again by Nagaraj Prabhu, that in the Vatsalya Rasa, parental affection for the Lord, there's this idea of anugraha, some feeling of superiority is there to directed toward Krishna. One feels like superior to Krishna, and therefore one has some compassion to Krishna. And so that's a primary rasa that we find those devotees absorbed in this way. The elderly gopis mentioned here that are in the house of Nanda Maharaj. And so they have some this feeling toward Krishna. Now, there are udipans, or symptoms, or stimuluses of that parental affection. Things like, we were mentioned in the previous verses of the small teeth coming out, and the fatty thighs of Krishna, the baby. Huh? Somebody mentioned another one?
No,
oh, okay. The fatty thighs, yeah. Now, these things are all like stimuluses of this parental affection. And their activities also. Walking around, we do a little squat, short bodies, and being pulled around by the calves like that. So these things, when you see them, it's stimulating more and more. It's like waves fanning that parental affection that they have for the Lord, for Krishna. The thing for the Lord may be a little, yes, it's the Lord, but he's Krishna, not the Lord, because the Lord sort of squashes those feelings. But for Krishna, they have these feelings. And it's fanned by these things, the little teeth and the movements like that. So, udipan, these stimuluses. Now, when we have a situation like this where they're feeling like this, in one verse, in the next verse, we see, all of a sudden this wave of anxiety overcomes them. Srimad Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says this is like a Sanchari Bhav. Sanchari Bhav means, it's a temporary kind of, what do I have here? A transitory feeling. It's a transitory feeling. They're feeling the joy in seeing little baby Krishna and Balaram, and then all of a sudden, as Mukunda says, like a wave comes up, oh no, you know, they could get hurt, you know, being pulled around like this. And they become filled with anxiety, and it sort of builds up, and it nourishes the Vatsalya Rasa that they have. It nourishes it, you know. This idea that they have to protect Krishna, that he's dependent upon them, that gets nourished by this anxiety that comes up like a wave. And it's a transitory thing, and so there are many of these Sanchari Bhavs that come and influence the love in different ways. But how are we going to even approach all these things, what we speak of more, unless we have a soft heart to be a little sensitive to understand these things? It's not going to happen. We'll miss everything because we don't have this subtle understanding, not just understanding, the subtle feeling with a soft heart to be receptive to those vibrations, those vibrations that are there in the heart of the resonance of Vrindavan that we're following. So we need to soften the heart by hearing, following the instructions of our spiritual master. In this way, we can bridge this gap between the material world and spiritual world. So, those are some thoughts on this subject matter. Unfortunately, I have some appointment early this morning. I have to leave, but if maybe there's one or two short comments or something. Janesh?
Prabhu, you're describing that when, like, from the material aspect, when one has a soft heart, then he can be taken advantage of very easily. I'm just wondering if there's any thing, like if one has a soft heart on the spiritual platform or in Krishna consciousness, if there's also any similar chance of being taken advantage of, whether being, you know, spiritually or...
I'll ask the gopis at Kurukshetra how they felt. Anyway, I'm not going to get into that, but... gopis, they gave their heart to Krishna. He left with the promise that he's coming back. He never came back, so they might feel like they were taking advantage. But it's hard to understand, you know, materially. Therefore, it's hard to discuss these things in short periods of time and answer, you know, questions like that very deeply, you know, because there's so much there. But to speak of having the knowledge and the purification to be able to answer such questions, but yes, in the spiritual realms, sometimes there may be feelings of being one's heart being taken advantage of. Okay, maybe Maharaj, maybe Prabhu can say.
Talk about a soft heart. I was reading in Raya Vishnu, and they were talking about Bhaktisiddhanta, and toward the end of his life, he was speaking about feelings we should have for, like, using the term karmis. And he said that we should feel that they are better than us, and genuinely feel this. And also he says that, you know, instead of fault finding, when we feel envy for other people and things like that, he said we should think about chanting more and purifying our hearts and to take these feelings.
Thank you.
Very pleased to hear your realization.
In the Bhagavad Gita beginning, Srila Prabhupada says, material compassion is due to ignorance. In the beginning of the purport, 143, I believe, he says the material compassion. And then later on, in Bhagavatam, second canto, Prabhupada says that material compassion is due to ignorance. Similar, this says it's a weak heart. So it's not material, there is no soft heart. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes that Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayajite Janayati Asu Vairagyam Gyanam Cha Jat Ahetukam. This Gyana Vairagya, that it is natural product when we perform bhakti. And I find Prabhupada many places, even third canto, he says, how do you see your progress? See if the Gyana Vairagya is arising. So Prabhupada pounding many times. So that Gyana Vairagya, when we say, hard-hearted, we are not interested. We are not interested weak heart. We are interested soft heart. Because soft heart is a natural, eternal existence of the soul. And that soft heart, Srila Bhakti, Srila Rupa Goswami Pad, in Nectar Devotion verse, he quoted this. The heart becomes soft when? He said, just like a fertile land, if it is hard-hearted, you throw some seed, it won't grow. And if it is flooded, it won't grow either. So material compassion is flooded water. And the gyan is like a hard-hearted.
I told you, there's subtleties. This is very nice. Even with English. Yeah. There's a subtleties. He's making a point. Very nice. Between a weak heart and a soft heart. You know, there's some subtlety there. We have to say, if we're so hard-hearted, we can't even understand that subtlety. I like that. That's good.
So Rupa Goswami Pad says, you mix the dirt with a little water and it becomes exact fertile where seed Guru gives, it will grow.
Okay, thank you very much. So we're going to Ashwamedh Bhagavatam Gita.